view that derivatives exacerbated the crisis and the concentrations, you know, led to a lot of losses at financial institutions. Do you have views, or have you written on what should be done, if anything, in terms of CDS or other types of credit derivatives?
No.
Okay. I understand you haven't written on it. Do you have views on what should be done?
Right now, I'm basically just focusing on residential mortgage-backed securities and the cash, and it, you know, primarily the cash side of things. So, I don't really have views. I think I'm really the wrong person to be talking to about this. Quite frankly, I haven't thought about, you know, the CDO market in a couple of years.
Okay.
That's okay. We still have more questions, and if you think there are other, you know, experts who you would suggest that we speak to, we're interested in your thoughts on who that would be. I mean, you knew who the other research analysts were on the street or independently. And if there's other research that was done that, you know, you respected, we'd be interested in reaching out to some of those people as well. And this isn't meant to be putting people on the spot. We're trying to gather information from people who took long and deep looks at what was going on and gather data and other analysis for the benefit of the commissioners and for the benefit really of a historical record.
Okay.
So, are there other research analysts who you think did some good work that we ought to look at?
You might want to look at some of Chris Flanagan's stuff, although he was much better in person than in writing. I mean, I think, you know, Chris's group and my group were doing about the best work out there in this area. And I'm not sure, you know, in retrospect, anyone would say they were happy with their work.
Let me ask a different question, if we can maybe see where we have common interests. You talked about the concentration of mortgage risk in various institutions. Were you surprised when big mortgage holders like Indie Mac or Fannie Mae went down? Why were you not surprised?
Well, Fannie Mae, yes, Indie Mac, no. Why not? I mean, it was reasonably clear that once, you know, subprime began to take huge losses at Alt-A, and some of the prime that really wasn't prime were not too far behind. And some of the entities that went down, we knew what they were buying. We had sort of been on the up in credit quality, you know, the subordinate bonds are going to take losses, deals are going to take losses, book for a while. I mean, you saw it unfolding, it never, you know, at the top, I mean, everyone said what was really obvious. Well, as it was unfolding, it was obvious there was a problem. The magnitude of the problem was much larger than we had anticipated.
Meaning you didn't think it would spread to all of the AAAs? For example, Fannie and Freddie? Yeah, okay.
Well, Fannie and Freddie, it was clear how much contagion there was after the SIDS went down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Fannie and Freddie, it was clear they were fairly thinly capitalized, but it was not clear that the government was necessarily going to put them in conservatorship. I mean, I think that took everybody by surprise. I mean, it was clear their loans were going to be affected.
The mobile home industry, manufactured housing, had a tremendous losses around 2003 that called the value of a AAA rating into question. When all these institutions were buying AAAs, either the AAA piece of a mortgage security or, worse, of a CDO, did anybody have concerns about the quality of a AAA rating?
I think the answer is, yeah, I think people had concerns. I think, you know, we had concerns on the, we had concerns on the CDO side. Did we publish the concerns? Not directly. And why not? Because ultimately, me, like everyone else, is conflicted. You're paid by, you know, research should be as independent as you want, but you're ultimately paid by the trading desk. And we will never, I've never in 20 years, actually I've been doing it for longer than 20 years, said something I don't believe, but I've got thousands of sins of omission.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about people at these firms, Fannie, Freddie, the banks, whatever, that were investing in AAA, should they have been sensitive to the question that you had to do some due diligence?
We're all adults here.
Some behave more like that than others. Okay.
I mean, actually, it seems that the last thing we wrote was actually the thing that's in the CDO book. If you have it, if not, I can send you the article that the chapter in the book was based on, and it has a chart in terms of the percentages of cash versus synthetic and sort of sample deal. So
it would be great to have, just because email copies are, you know, have other usefulness, so that would be terrific. A few more questions, just maybe this is covered by your article, and maybe just you have belated thoughts about it. Do you have a sense of how much of the BBB tranches of subprime ended up in CDOs?
About 100%.
And do you have, did you actually do research on that? Or know anyone other than the Harvard undergrad who did research on that?
No.
Okay.
We never figured out. I mean, it seems that it was going disproportionately to CDO buyers.
And who bought the triple Bs before the development of ABS-CDOs?
Buyers who specialized in deep credit.
And were they an insurance company? Kind of, what types of folks were they?
Insurance companies, hedge funds.
And
it was a tiny corner of the market. Remember, the triple Bs are a tiny percentage of these deals.
Yes. So, you know, someone has said to me there was a level of due diligence by those buyers prior to the CDO bid.
What's your email, by the way?
You can send it to C. Seifer. C. Seifer, S-E-E-F as in Frank, E-R, at FCIC.gov.
Okay, hold on a second. Okay, can you send me an email and I'll just
attach
this?
Sure.
And Lori, I didn't really introduce myself. None of us did, but I was a senior managing director at Bear Stearns in the CLO CDO group. I primarily did CLOs, and I.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, you know all the researchers.
Well,
probably better than I do.
Yes and no. I was so busy doing deals, doing CLO deals that. I didn't read any of the mortgage research.
I want to now.
Yeah, and also just I introduced myself to you after the TARP conference, where I thought you had some very interesting things to say.
Oh, thank you.
Along with 200 other people who introduced themselves to you. There's one other thing I'm trying desperately to find
that we had actually done that was, you know, in terms of the triple A. When did TABX come out? That was 2007, right? Early 2007?
Spring of 07. Yeah. It was.
as you're looking for things, I guess I was trying to ask the point about that before the ABS-CDO bid developed, that the buyers of the triple Bs, like, did a level of due diligence and research.
And they were compensated a hell of a lot better. The spread differentials were much, much wider between triple A's and triple Bs.
Huh. And what squeezed the spreads? Why did spreads narrow between the risky stuff and the less risky stuff?
Part of it was the buyers, part of it was the global contraction, part of it was the huge expansion of buyers and the value of it to CDOs, part of it was the global contraction of risk premium.
So CDOs contributed because that added to the demand is what you're saying?
Yeah.
So when did this transition really start and end?
Well, it sort of went on for a while. It wasn't, it wasn't a one-shot thing.
No, I'm sure. But say by the beginning of 06, was there pretty much?
I'd say before that. I mean, I'd say this whole thing was going on through, you know, late 04, early 05, late 04, 05, 06.
So by the middle of 05, there was pretty much nothing besides CDO bids?
Yeah.
And then...
I mean, you know, it, you say, well, just give it 100%. Well, I don't know if it's 100%, but when you create tranches, you sort of assume the CDOs would be the buyer, just like you assume the last cash flow in subprime was a SIV bond. I mean, you just, you know, the debt sort of made assumptions on who would buy it, which is traditionally the guy who valued, you know, the bond the most highly.
I didn't catch the second part of that.
The triple at the last cash flow triple A tranche in subprime traditionally went to SIV. It was a SIV bond.
Yeah,
well,
I didn't
why? Because you got the widest spread with the, and you got your triple A rating.
So you mean the triple A tranche before super senior?
Hmm?
You mean the last AAA tranche before the super senior tranche?
There's no super senior tranche for the subprime deal. The senior tranche is tranche sequentially.
Are you talking about subprime?
I'm sorry, remedial education. When you say the lowest tranche on AAA,
that the last cash flow tranche.
Okay, last, thanks.
So, one more academic hypothesis is that the development of synthetics kept the bubble going, the housing bubble going. The other academic hypothesis is that, well, it helped burst the bubble.
In what?
It helped burst the bubble by, you know, ABX or others showing that there were negative sentiments in the marketplace.
I think it kept the bubble going. Well, a lot of things that kept the bubble going. I mean, there was a huge contraction of risk premiums across the board is just huge. So you have the whole rise of affordability products. You had all sorts of breaks in the process. Nobody had any vested interest in the collateral, and then obviously you were able to sell it really tight. So the cash side of things, there are a lot of things going on the cash side of things too. And I think it's a bit of a stretch to say synthetics, kind of kept the bubble going longer. I think there were a whole host of things that kept the bubble going longer.
Okay.
When you say there was a contraction, this is Dixie Noonan, by the way. When you say there was a contraction of risk premiums across the board, are you referring across the board with respect to the U.S. real estate market, or are you speaking more broadly?
I'm speaking more broadly.
Because I raise it because Alan Greenspan has said that if you didn't have subprime, you would have had something else that caused the financial crisis because risk premiums were so low. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yes.
So why did all of this stuff get channeled into mortgage and mortgage-related products? Disproportionately, I guess.
When you say, I guess I'm not quite sure what you mean by disproportionately.
I'll give an example. We had a glut in the 1970s, and it went in when we had petrodollars, and it all went into sovereign loans, Mexico, Poland, and the companies blew themselves up with that rather than with mortgages. And the question is, why was it predominantly mortgages this time around?
I don't have a good answer to that. I mean, clearly, you had a real estate, I mean, I think it kind of said on itself, you had a real estate bubble, with stimulated home building, which you had the rising affordability products, which, you know, fueled the increase in prices, and it kind of said, I mean, once you were up, you know, and then the rage of speculative activity that surrounded it, as everyone became convinced that houses could go down. The relaxation of credit standards, you know, allowed for relaxation of affordability, allowing people to buy larger homes, which doesn't answer the case, answer the question of why it was real estate and not something else. I mean, I think once you have, you know, the signs of a market exploding, it just begins to feed on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Would you comment on how ABX sort of changed the marketplace? Nice broad question for you.
What I don't know, and I think you should be able to, and maybe other dealers could provide you with this data we never saw, is, you know, ABX volumes versus volumes in the over-the-counter market. I think the over-the-counter market was much, much larger by an order of magnitude. But again, I haven't seen volume.
I apologize, Lori. I don't quite know what you mean by that.
I think that the ABX market was much smaller than the volume of derivatives that was traded on the volume of synthetics that was traded on over-the-counter basis.
So just bilateral,
right?
But you mean single name?
Single name.
Sorry. So OTC, you meant single name, pay-as-you-go swaps.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
So I guess hopefully we'll figure this out eventually. But I mean, when it comes to synthetic CDOs. Was it more common to have ABX credit default swaps based on the index or single name?
Single name. Everything was single name.
Oh, was it?
I mean, that should have been clear from the Goldman testimony. With the picking of credit.
Well, that brings us to another question, which was how common was the phenomenon we saw with Goldman? I mean, is that the way most of these deals were structured with some input from
I don't know. I wasn't involved with the picking credit.
Right.
And that was not an evasive answer. I was not involved with the picking credit.
But to go back to the question of how the ABX affected the market, to what extent did the ABX, the publication of the ABX, affect the over-the-counter market? Pricing, for example.
You've got the interconnections that you would always have, but I mean, what you actually had was the price discovery. Oh, gee, it's going down. Okay, well, that means my stuff's going down too. It was really the price discovery mechanism. So maybe the news spread faster, but I don't think it was more than that.
It would have spread anyway.
Yeah. Maybe price discovery was just a little better.
Yes, I mean, we've heard some criticisms or there's some controversy over the ABX index, like the fact that the dealers who were members of the of market were the ones that provided the quotes. I mean, do you buy any of those arguments?
I think the quotes were reasonably good.
And this may or may not have been your...
Basically what market does is they drop the, you know, top quartile from the bottom quartile and average the middle. So if one guy lies about quotes, everyone is going to lie at the same time. And you have some guys that are long and some guys that are short.
We talked to a big institution that had been buying AAA stuff who said, now this in part is they want to get some recovery, that almost 100% of the stuff that was delivered to them under those AAAs was different in terms of the mortgages than they expected, and a huge amount of that was, they believe, fraudulent. Do you have any sense of whether that was a general phenomenon?
In terms of what was delivered to who?
As somebody who bought AAA stuff, securities.
But distinguish RMBS from, do you mean subprime?
Yeah, subprime. These would be subprime AAA, sorry.
What do you mean, were the underlying loans, did they fail to verify anything?
Yep.
Yeah.
They did. Do you think that was a prevalent problem?
When you buy a loan with stated income, it's stated income for a reason. You assume the guy lied.
Yeah.
So what do you mean was it a prevalent problem? The deal has 90% stated income. I assume 90% of the guys lie.
So why would somebody believe that's a AAA security?
Why don't you go ask the rating agency?
We might.
We are.
But, I mean, why would anybody buy it? I mean, if even if it has a AAA with that perception?
Because you thought you were getting 28% credit support. That means that over 50% of your security you could default with 50% severity, which at that time seemed like outrageous numbers, and
yeah,
you still end up with recovery.
Okay.
That's why. Because it looked like the credit support was sufficient.
Thanks.
We thought, I mean, at the time, our first round of losses were the, you know, our first cut in the static home price environment in sort of late 2006. Is that you would have 13% to 14% losses on these deals. Sort of the home prices stayed static forever.
Mm-hmm. That's 13% losses. That's so something at 25% default.
Yes. That would if home prices stayed static forever. We thought about that as the very worst case. It's just that, you know, this has turned out to be so much worse than was clear to most of us at the time. I mean, I'm sure there are a few people who saw it all, but...
So, do you have your own explanation for why it turned out to be so much worse?
I think it would be, we all underestimated the interconnections.
You would, just so that we don't miss anything, play out what those interconnections are?
You know, the interconnections between, you know, the banks holding a lot of their own paper and the huge exposure there. You have the interconnections between the institutions, you know, kind of how dependent they all were on the other. So when Lehman showed, or Bear showed, any sign of weakness, there was a huge run. And, you know, one thing that I might try to look into is whether some institutions perhaps were betting against other institutions at the same time as they were making, you know, margin calls far higher than what they needed to make. Yeah. see, you know, how interconnected everything was.
That's very helpful, Lori. Thank you.
We're having a fire drill announcement. I'm sorry.
We don't want to give you up, though.
Yeah, this is irritating at my end. Sorry about that.
The commission has the authority to ask for data and to subpoena data, to subpoena people, to answer questions. So
I just haven't been thinking about these issues in a while in this way.
Sorry, let me just finish my thought. And so please just think with us for a minute. That was not intended in any way as any sort of threat. Forgive me. Quite the opposite. It's more, if you were in our shoes, this is what I want to ask, if you were in our shoes with that ability, given all that you know and understand, what data should we ask of people? And what lines of inquiry do you think we should pursue that, things that have not been uncovered so readily so far? We just want the benefit of your wisdom.
I would look very, 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 very carefully at, and I think one thing that, contributed very heavily to this is obviously the Sarah and Lehman situations. I would look very carefully at exactly the sequence of the margin calls on there at the end, and also on Lehman, and then also what exposure other than what other exposure institutions have to these institutions. For example, did someone bet against Bear and then proceed to make huge margin calls and help drive them up?
Just for the record, I have not been involved in any way in the Bear investigation. I just want you to know that everyone here knows that.
No, but you remember the speed at which that went down.
Unfortunately, I do.
And
that was just a comment for the record.
And, sort of think about who might have wished for Bear to go out of business and how they might have set out, they might have made margin, how they might have exacerbated the situation. But I would actually turn it into if you're going to just say, well, gee, I don't think kind of focusing on the contraction of risk premiums does anyone any good. That's kind of old history. But I think focusing on the interconnections and how, entities might have systematically driven each other out of the game, and what those interconnections were exactly, could actually prevent something like this from happening again. Because by the time you get done, regulatory reform is going to be passed in some way, shape, or form. So the question is, well, where do you make your contribution?
Could you help us understand just what it was like on the ground? How did the environment change in around 2005, did standards just suddenly plummet for these deals? And was there a change in the nature of the market participants?
Everyone thought it was contained to subprime even through early 2007.
Okay, let me give you a couple of examples. One would be, did the size of the equity stake, we've heard, but we don't have data yet, taken by the CDO manager, the collateral manager. I've seen a couple of examples where that seems to have declined, where the CDO manager had less of a stake. Is that a relevant measure of skin in the game, and maybe a measure that that the incentives.
Well, that doesn't tell you the demand increased or declined. You can make a case that other people were willing to buy the equity, and that skin in the game became less important. I mean, actually, I've always bought the skin in the game, and you know, I once wrote something to this effect. Never wrote it again because I got chewed out by the desk pretty badly, but I always thought to get in the game for a CDO manager was not necessarily a good thing, because when the deal is going well, everyone's interest is aligned. The minute the deal is not going well, so basically as long as that bottom piece, you know, is intact and everything's going well, the CDO manager, you know, kind of has everyone's interest in the line. The minute things begin to go badly, the CDO manager essentially gets the upside, and the downside is capped at the equity, so he's got it, so he basically has the incentive to roll the dice. So I never loved the idea of skin in the game anyway, so to the extent you can get other buyers to buy this paper, it's not clear to me that necessarily indicates a damn thing.
So why didn't the desk like that idea?
I'm sorry?
You said the desk didn't want you to run that?
Well, I mean, one of the things, the main selling points of the deal is, oh, this guy's got a lot of skin in the game, isn't that a good thing?
So it helps sell deals anyway.
They think it helps sell the deal. But then you can always go in and say, oh, well, gee, there was just so many, there was a lot of just great demand for the equity, so we sold a little bit more. I mean, but I've never been sure which way that cut.
Was it common in 05 or 06 for the equity investor to also be taking a correlation trade to be covered with a CDS on something else?
No. I mean, usually, what do you mean, the manager, the CDO manager?
No, the equity investor. Since you said, it became the case where there was a lot of demand for the equity tranche, and you know, we've got examples like the Magnetar.
Right.
Story.
I mean, Magnetar was Magnetar was long equity, short the. But you know, maybe there were one or two other hedge funds using that strategy. What we called it, the Magnetar strategy, actually.
So it was widely known at the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that common.
Right.
So is the role of the CDO manager relevant here? I mean, were they doing their best to pick good stuff, or at some point did they were they not doing a very diligent job?
Well, you know, as I said, if you have equity and things start going badly, you have an incentive to take on more risk. But it's not clear to me that you can differentiate that from the fact that their pickings were just very, very slim by the time you got to 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. And there's no good stuff to be had. So it's not clear, you know, what you would have done in their shoes.
So I've been curious for a long time. Do you have any idea why the Irish Stock Exchange listed so many of these tranches?
No idea.
Circling back a little bit to the rating agencies, would you care to offer why you think they got things so wrong? And what specifically they got wrong?
I mean, obviously, the issues with the issuer pay model are widely known. You figured out exactly how, they told you exactly how they rated things so that you could, and then you figured out how best to arb them. The rating agencies were And even after things started, you know, kind of obviously going bad, the rating agencies were very, very slow to acknowledge the problem.
Why were they so slow?
I don't know.
Do you have any insight into why they made the correlation assumption they did that facilitated ABS-CDOs? Which clearly was wrong, or at least in retrospect was wrong?
You didn't have much, you actually didn't have all that much history on what the correlation was, and what nobody saw was that it was all driven by home prices, and home prices would decline 30% nationwide. But yeah, their correlations looked off, but it was hard to put, it was never clear what the right number should be.
Do you think that the rating agencies should have been doing more due diligence or more inquiry into how due diligence was or wasn't done by others?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what they're paid for.
Do you think buyers, like, could you just talk a little broadly? You know, I was not in mortgages, just so I don't have good insights into this. The buyers of subprime securities other than the CDO bid, sort of, who were they? Who relied on the rating?
I'm not the right person. I'm not the right person to ask who our buyers were. I mean, I would go with traders for that.
Even by broad category, I'm not asking specific names. I mean more broad categories. And
in terms of what?
Who was buying subprime, and did they rely too much on just, okay, it has this rating?
For the AAA buyers, yes, they relied on the rating very heavily. Should they have done their own due diligence? Probably. But people buy a AAA rating because they don't think something with a AAA rating has a credit risk, and therefore you're not tempted to do your own due diligence. And that's why the market worked. I mean, you sort of have to put some trust in the rating agencies. And the bonds, I actually find a lot of fault with what the rating agencies did, because, you know, if you're a pure AAA buyer, you're not accustomed to looking at credit risk, you don't look at it. And I once had the following argument with Freddie Mac. Freddie and Fannie had allowed what we call the Stegosaurus bonds to go through. Those were bonds that, if you ran the CPR at even numbers, it looked like really short bonds, but if the CPR came in at like 6.1 or 6.2 rather than 6.0 flat, the bond was a 18-year rather than a 5-year. So it was a disastrous-looking bond, and Freddie said, well, we disclosed it in our prospectus. And I said, yes, you did, but do you know how many prospectuses I've read? That number would be zero. And most of our investors are buying a short security because they assume it's a short security, and when they look it up on a yield table, they assume they're getting the total picture. They're not expecting it to be a 6-year at 6 CPR, an 18-year at 6.001, 6.999-year, and then an 18-year, and then a 6-year again at 7.0. I mean, it's just not something people look for. And I mean, I think the same thing can be said here. People relied upon the rating agencies for those AAA ratings. They were not credit risk buyers. They thought they were buying something with no credit risk.
So why would the rating agencies not have, you know, kind of pointed that out?
Because I think the rating agencies genuinely thought, at least early on, that they were AAA. The thing that I fault the rating agencies the most for is that things so clearly deteriorated, they were not on top of it. I mean, I can understand the initial sets of ratings. Or at least I can, I don't like them, but I can at least understand where they came from.
So when do you think that things had deteriorated so clearly? I mean, January of 07, or?
Yeah.
And when the downgrade started in May, or I think there were some.
Well, they did. Yeah, I mean, they didn't. And those are just the subprime downgrades. I mean, by early 07, it was clear that, you know, Alt-A and Prime were also having issues.
So you really mean sometime in 06? I mean, can you put a month roughly on it?
Late, very late 06. November of 06. December of 06.
And what was that? So what was the indication? The early payment defaults in subprime?
Well, that was actually even earlier than that. But the delinquencies began to skyrocket. I mean, it was pretty clear in early, you know, by late 06 that...
Okay. I really hope we can get some of your research to read through this history, since everybody has pointed to it as a record of the mortgage boom.
Well, you know what? Why don't you get? Yeah, can you go to UBS? The problem is that I wrote an article a week for 15 years. I do not remember what I ate for breakfast, let alone what was in each article. I read through these articles and I think, every so often, I think, God, I was smart then.
You must have had something good for breakfast then.
And I mean, you know, the point is, I was actually, as we were talking, there was actually one article that I was desperately looking for that I haven't managed to find. Where we tore apart the CapEx, and you know, it's possible we didn't even publish it, that we just used it for one of our lunch and learns.
But yes, we can go to UBS and ask them for your research. If there's any way you could, I don't know that we want to ask them for 15 years of
weekly. Yeah, the problem is that I don't know. You know, we had a separate CDO publication. You could.
So ask them for all your research on CDOs and TABEX and.
Yeah.
What was the weekly one called? What was the name of it?
The Mortgage Strategist.
So, I mean, it's one of the reasons why, I mean, well, I guess my first question about, you called it the Stegosaurus bonds?
Yeah, I mean, that was basically an example meant to say, listen, you can't, that was just basically meant to say, that, you know, you can't expect people who don't normally look at this stuff to think in those terms.
So was that a common product? I just don't remember hearing about that.
No, it was like a couple of them, and then Freddie and Fannie wisely cut it off. I mean, but I was meant to draw an analogy.
Okay. But I mean, to me, that brings up a theme, which is that they fall back on that they only rate the credit risk, and what you're describing, I guess, is. Well, I guess it's a credit trigger, but it's a liquidity risk. So.
I mean, okay. We had actually, I found the lunch and learn, I've got to find the article, but we had actually done something on TABEX in Monday, December 4th, we did a lunch and learn, and we actually, as I'm looking at this, we assumed a 40% correlation 8% average deal losses. And our worst case, we had correlations of 20, 30, and 40% between the bonds. Average deal losses of 8%. 7% standard deviation. 7% standard deviation on individual deals, and showed the AAA tranche of CABEX, which you could think of as a big proxy for the AAA tranche of the CDO, would actually take losses.
That was December 4th of 2006?
Yes. And I'm trying to find, I found the lunch and learn it was based on. I'm having trouble finding the, we actually printed that table. We eliminated the text that went along with it because, again, my sins are sins of omission.
So this was before the TABEX opened, I mean, opened for business, so to speak.
Right. It opened in January of 07. But, I mean, basically, you know, you could draw analogies to ABS CEOs. I mean, that was kind of, when we saw those results, we were somewhat shaken up. I mean, I thought, under not unlikely situations, AAA CDOs would take losses. And now that I have the data, I'm going to go look for the article. And I was doing a search on TABEX. Maybe I should have done a loss search on tranche trading.
Did that assume any particular, did your table include any assumptions about housing prices?
No. It was just a simple correlation standard deviation. Nothing on housing prices.
So you're familiar with TABEX, but I'm not. This is a Tricadia deal?
Huh?
It's TABEX index. Can you talk a little bit about some individual deals? Do you recall any deals that made you kind of change your view on the CDO world?
No, I didn't. Oh, I tended not to look at individual deals. Tended to follow. I didn't look at individual CDO deals.
Okay.
Lori, as I've thought about all of this mess for more than 3 years, one of the themes that I come back to is that there weren't enough countervailing voices, or the countervailing voices.
And I found it. I found the article I was looking for.
Right. Okay.
And anyone who looked at this article, and you can see, you'll be able to see how very conservative my assumptions were laughably low in retrospect. But at the time, if you looked at this article, you'd say, well, gee, AAA CDOs under not inconceivable circumstances could take losses. It's Exhibit 9. It's Table 9.
Greg, can you send that to us?
Yes.
Great.
Did you send me an email with your...
We're in a conference room. I'll send you one as soon as we're done. In fact, you know what?
Here, I'll send you one
right
now.
All
right. Lori, I'm going to send you one. This is Dixie. What's your email address?
It's L. Goodman. So actually, you know what? I got this thing up. I can...
C-S-E-E-F-E-R. C for Chris.
C yep. for Chris. S as in Sam. E E. Yep. F as in Frank. E R at FCIC.gov.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I was trying to go somewhere with a more open-ended question. As I've thought about this, looked at the rating agencies, learned more details about areas of the marketplace and activity that I also was unaware of, it just seems to me there were insufficient countervailing forces. The critics didn't get heard, No one had an incentive to critique the models. No one had an incentive to raise worries, concerns about various products or data or models. Have you thought in any way, big picture, about that and what some of the countervailing forces could be, should be, could be set up?
Not really.
Okay.
Lori, what about this? I mean, one of the things we've learned in talking to folks and looking at different institutions, not to mention hearing Levin grill all the Goldman people a week or two ago, was, you know, there were folks out there, like Goldman at least, that, you know, saw something in late 06 at the latest and started to change their position. Of course, now we know that folks like Paulson and Burry and Eisman and I forget who else, you know, saw things and started going short. And at the same time, it looks like folks like Bear and others continued to go long. Was there discussion out there at the street at the time, and I'm not from the street, so I don't know, about the folks? Was there knowledge that these folks were going short? Was there knowledge? And if there was, were people saying they're nuts or they're going to lose out? Or what was the sentiment on the street in the late 06 and early 07 time frame?
When things began to go sour, everything became very, very closed. I don't know what the sentiment was on the street. I mean, I was at UBS. I was negative on this stuff. UBS lost $40 billion. I didn't know UBS had the exposure it had. I'm out there basically saying AAA CDOs under not inconceivable circumstances could take losses. It's buried in a table. I didn't print it at the request of the desk, but I left the table in. The desk is out there buying the stuff. I didn't know until June of 07 what UBS's own exposure was.
Is that the way it should have been? I mean, was there supposed to be a wall there, or were they supposed to?
No, they're not supposed. They're
supposed to take your research. They're supposed to know. Yeah, they're supposed to know no more than the salespeople knew, and probably knew less.
I just
want to make one more attempt at this, Lori. Other than what you were saying about who went short and had incentives, is there data about credit derivatives or mortgage-related credit derivatives that is not known, that the Commission is in a unique position to gather, that you think would be beneficial?
We had no data on the size of the over-the-counter market whatsoever. I was never able to, you know, everyone said, oh, what are losses going to be? What are losses going to be? And I said, I have no idea what loss there could be. I can tell you what loss there could be on the cash, but the synthetics are a huge part of this. And I don't know the net losses on a synthetic are by definition zero, but UBS losses aren't going to feel like zero. I mean, I don't, you know, financial institutions are by and large deeply affected by this. And, you know, I mean, it was the number one request from our equity guy to help them on what they did, and I wasn't able to get that information.
So what information in particular? Just who the buyer?
Kind of the size of the creditor default swap market.
Specifically when it came to synthetic CDOs?
Yeah. No. Synthetic CDOs, we knew. It was the total size of the... There were a lot of over-the-counter CDOs that were not in CDOs.
So the single name mortgage.
Yeah. It was a huge market. And, oh, by the way, you also didn't know anything about the corporate CDS.
Right.
I mean, I had no idea what that was about. I would want to know the exposure that various entities. I'd want to know the size and can't put together something on the size of that market.
And when you say size of the market, you would actually, and that specifically means knowing who's exposed to what?
Or at least about general volumes.
So what do you think about, what data do we have? We've got BIS data and we've got data that's reported in the
OCC. Geographic data. Your data is geographic data. You got the same data I have.
Huh. Now, isn't there is data through the DTCC now.
Doesn't it go back?
Oh, no.
Maybe you could do better now. I didn't think that you had a general source of data.
I think, the DTCC started doing this in September 08 or October 08.
Oh, well, that'll be great, so then you can get things, you know, after the worst is bad.
Right.
No, I mean, it doesn't help us now.
Lori, thank you most sincerely for your time and your thoughts and your candor.
Sure. Okay, you'll have two things on your email. One thing is already there. The other thing I'm trying to find. The other thing I found and I've got to find again.
Great.
Can I ask one more question? Oh, sorry. You said about 100% of triple B tranches of MBS probably made it into CDOs. How about the triple B tranches of CDOs? Did they mostly make it into other CDOs, or was there a market for that?
I think they mostly made it into other CDOs, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Because remember, that was even tinier.
Right. Okay, thank you. I really wanted to ask a question.
Thank you very much for your time, Lori.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.